Welcome to the Global Tech Leaders Podcast, where we help business leaders and individual contributors with actionable insights to hit their number and figure out the nuances of truly operating a business globally today, squeezing the essence of the lessons learned from the planet's top tech leaders. This is your guide to joining the fast track to global market scaling.
Welcome, I'm Ross Lauder, your host from Single Focus Talent. Today we are joined by Ryan Schertzer. Ryan comes to us from Ohio. Ryan had worked in Quest in Cork a number of years ago in his career, allowing him to have that fully fledged Irish EMEA experience and kind of be that fish out of the water and grow a European sales team. So I really wanted Ryan to share with us today that experience and how he adjusted to that, what impact it had on him both personally as well as professionally in his career. So welcome to today's call, Ryan.
Thanks, Ross. I really appreciate you having me here. And this is a topic that I'm really excited to talk about. There's probably not a week that goes by that my family and I don't reminisce and talk about our time in Ireland. So I'm happy to be here and happy to share.
That's fantastic. Much appreciated, Ryan. I think you've got a lot to bring to the table by way of that experience. So we're going to dive into that in a little bit. For those folks who are probably in North America thinking about expanding their software business to Europe, and really think that, you know, putting an expat in place would make sense for them. But before we get to that, maybe let's just talk a little bit around yourself. You know, walk us through your career. What brought you to software, but really sales? And I know it's a topic you're very passionate about, and you've spent a lot of time training, teaching, and coaching. So maybe just walk us through your career to date, if you would.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. And I'm constantly reminded that I'm not as young as I used to be. So this story takes longer than it used to, but I'll try to be as brief as I can. I actually got my degree in marketing, and I started my career with the technology and marketing. I had some smart college roommates that were into computers, and that seems like kind of a silly thing to say now, but back at the time, our dorm room was the only one that had two computers in it. We had a Mac and a PC, and so we were kind of the epicenter for technology. And during that time, the first Internet Explorer browser came out. So if you're looking to date me, you can pretty easily do that. But we taught ourselves how to write HTML code, and that gave me a platform to get introduced to some technology companies. And I got a job right out of school in a software company, and I've been doing software ever since. I spent the first 7 or 8 years of my career in marketing. And then I decided to take the masochistic step of picking up a quota and moving into sales because I really liked the quantifiability of sales. It's really easy to measure success in sales roles. Sure. So somebody was foolish enough to let me go try to sell. And fortunately enough, I had some success and as an individual rep, and then I had the opportunity to take on a leadership role on an inside sales team. And I did that for a few years. I inherited a couple other teams. And after I had done that for a few years, our organization, the company I was with at the time, Quest Software, was looking to move all of their individual inside sales teams in Europe into a central location. And this is where you and I met, Ross. And I got the opportunity to move to Ireland and be a part of a project to centralize that function and all the functions in Europe into one location as a shared services center. I was there for a few years. I came back and have done a number of things since then. But I've really spent most of the last 10 to 15 years focusing on inside sales, and in the place that we find ourselves in today with the pandemic that has hit the globe, I have joked, not that it's a time for lots of jokes, but I've joked that we're all in inside sales now. We're learning this new motion as salespeople of having to sell without going to be face-to-face with our customers. And sure. So that experience has really served me well. And you know, and puts us as sales leaders and specifically inside sales leaders in a unique position of being able to educate some of the rest of our organization about how to go to work every day and be able to do the things that we do, be able to do them really efficiently, do them at scale, and execute for the organization and really model for everybody else what that looks like. So that's probably about as short as I can make 20 plus years of things that I've done.
No, I appreciate that. I think for me, I'm keen to dive into the inside sales piece. And, you know, Ryan, when you and I worked together, I will say the date, it was back in 2011. We really had seen a global shift to inside sales at that point in time. And I know that the organization we were a part of had stipulated that they were gravitating their effort towards inside sales. And I think if you look at some of the big startups, the spin-ups today, you'll see that they, right out of the gate, are inside sales guys. And I suppose for you, have you seen any challenges that, you know, you feel you can't do over the phone or with an effective web demo? Or do you feel the market is such that software today is lending itself to that inside sell more? Or maybe you could just take us through those two differences and where you think field may be appropriate and what that reason would be.
Sure. You know, there's a lot to that. And I think the answer to that question would have been very different 2 or 3 months ago. You know, I feel there's always been a bit of an us and them mentality when it comes to inside sales and field sales. And if there's a silver lining to the way things have changed in the last couple months is that hopefully everybody starts to see this as us and us. Okay. You know, I've never seen inside sales, though many people have seen it this way, but I've never seen inside sales as the junior salespeople in an organization. Inside salespeople are professional salespeople that sell products and carry a quota just like everybody else. And I think what organizations are learning in spades through this coronavirus pandemic is that we can execute as an organization without going to see people. That doesn't mean that there's no value in that. I've been a rep where I've gone to see people, and I understand the value of sitting face to face with somebody and just getting to know them, developing a rapport and a relationship that's more difficult to do over the phone. But, you know, the dynamic that has changed is that we all join Zoom meetings for everything now. Inside sales isn't just phone calls, but we are seeing people face to face every day. I've been on more video calls in the last 2 months than I probably have been in 10 years.
Sure.
Because a lot of times those were conference calls and people just didn't even turn on their video. And as small of a change as that may seem, I think what companies are going to see is that they were able to execute and probably execute, hopefully at a high level during this time in a quarter, and they're really going to start to rethink how they deploy resources. So there was a shift already in place where companies were realizing that they could deploy resources on the inside and be able to execute previous to the last couple of months. But I think you're just going to see that continue as more and more people work from home, whether or not companies want to do it or not. They just may not let you come and visit. Their workforce is going to be much more distributed. So going and seeing someone isn't going to look like going to an office. I think every organization is really going to have to rethink how they do this. And especially for those of us that sell to technology folks, it's just going to be different than it was before. And so we have a unique opportunity to help lead our organizations in that way.
Yeah, I would fully agree with that. I think the world has shifted and different countries have reacted different ways to this pandemic. But I think moreover, there's definitely a fear factor there now in society. And I think that we will be forever changed. We've spoken on previous shows about this as well, that we are now forever changed as a result of this pandemic. And it's often forced the technology issue. And I think what you're seeing with certain organizations that I work with, their software could in fact be adopted more readily because it's made them improve their internal processes and remove non-valued activities, manual activities, activities that maybe more kind of people orientated, et cetera, when they don't need to be. And I think it's a catalyst almost for digital transformation across organizations to become more productive. So there's definitely going to be some pain in this for some elements of society. There's no doubt about that. And we're seeing that play out certainly in retail, et cetera. But then again, the other side of that is that online is doing very, very well too. So I think this is it's a massive disrupting factor that, you know, maybe hits the human race every 100 years, but I think that this is the first time that it's an accelerator to technology in the way that it has been so far. So yeah, certainly a fascinating one, and I know there'll be books and PhDs done on it for sure. So I suppose let's dive right in, Ryan, to your Ireland experience. So it's very common that US multinationals would set up their EMEA operations in Ireland as a headquarters. What Quest did was a little bit different in that they had regional hubs, and they had offices in various countries, and they were centralizing those offices into Ireland. And there's various tax efficiencies for doing that. There's concentration of languages in Ireland, et cetera. There's a number of reasons that you might do that. But as a company, they followed the road that Microsoft, Google, HubSpot, Salesforce, Oracle have all done from an Irish perspective. I'm just curious, you know, we met each other in 2011, Ryan. You landed in Ireland. What did that look like? And I suppose maybe let's back up a small bit too. What made you decide you wanted to do that? What was the driving force to say, hey, I'm going to do that. Let me raise my hand for that opportunity. And then when you landed here, maybe tell us a bit more about the experience, if you would.
Yeah, well, it was a grand coming together of a number of things. The summer of 2010, I guess it was, my wife and I had been fortunate enough to travel a bit, and we were in Europe, and while we were over there, my wife said to me, "What do you think it would take for Quest to send you over here for a time?" And at the time, I was, as I mentioned, I was a sales manager leading an inside sales team, a couple inside sales teams, and I said, well, you know, realistically, I would probably either have to go back into marketing and take an individual contributor role, because we had some people that had done that, where that was a role that you could kind of do from anywhere, and it didn't really matter. And we had some people move internationally doing jobs like that. Okay. Or I said I would probably have to go. I would have to go be a rep and see if somebody would let me fill a European sales role as an individual contributor. I said, but you know, I think that's pretty unlikely because I don't know the accounts, I don't know the market, I don't know any of that stuff. I said, so you know, realistically, there's almost zero chance. And we got back from that trip, and within a few weeks, our senior vice president of worldwide sales was in our office, and he was sharing some of the long-term plans of the organization. One of which was they were planning to centralize their European sales center. And at the time, they were still looking at a couple different places. They were looking in Poland, they were looking in Ireland, at a couple different locations, and they hadn't decided yet. And I walked up to him and I said, you know, I don't know if you're considering having anybody from the US be a part of that, but if there was any opportunity, I'd love to talk about it. And he said, oh, really? That's great. And that was in probably June or July. And I didn't hear anything else about it until December.
Right.
We were already interested in doing something, even though we didn't know where or what at the time. And sure enough, in December, I was looking around at some other opportunities internally. And that same head of sales called me and said, hey, I really want you to think about this. I think this is a great move for you. I won't give you all the background on why yet, because I think you're probably going to ask that question about what led to that decision. But, you know, he came back in December and said, you know, I think you should really think about this one. You know, if you, you know, the other ones are good jobs too. They were all within Quest, but he said, you know, this is one I think you should really go after. And so, about 3 weeks later, I landed on the ground in Ireland.
Wow.
And our lives haven't been the same since.
Wow. Okay. I was going to ask you, what was the time you landed? So you've preempted that one. And I suppose from a sales leader's perspective, let's fast forward a small bit before we get into the Ireland experience. What did that mean for you by way of your career? Like, we can talk about the personal elements, and I think we'll dive into that as well. But like, what impact did that have on your career, that international flavor or that bit in your portfolio, as it were?
Yeah, that was really what he focused on when he said, this is why I think you should do this role. And he used his personal experience in it. You know, at the time, he was the worldwide sales leader for a $1 billion software company. So no small feat. He had done incredibly well in his career. He had been a CEO prior to that. I mean, there was very little he hadn't done.
Right.
But he said to me, he said, even now, with all the experience that I have and all the things that I've done, the one thing that has kept me from some roles throughout my career is I don't have international experience. And he said, I've managed international teams, but I've always done it from the US. And that is not the same thing as living overseas. And as he put it, getting your international merit badge. He said, you know, when you move and you live there and you're immersed in the culture and you understand that market, it's entirely different than having responsibility for it from several thousand miles away. And he said, all of these other jobs that are here, they're great, but none of them are going to be transformational to your career in the way that moving overseas and getting this experience will be. If the goal is to broaden your horizons and put something on your resume that's really difficult to get otherwise, because it's not very often that you're going to get an opportunity like this without having had the experience already. You know, it's almost like in any other scenario, you'd have to move there yourself, look for a job, and then get it. Not very many people are going to move you over there for the first time. And he was dead right. I've had so many inquiries over the years. I got more people, more companies that came to me while I was in Ireland looking to hire me to come to their organization than I have at maybe any time in my career, because, you know, to your point, there are so many American multinationals that want an American with international experience to run so that they understand both sides. They both understand the local culture and they understand how American organizations run and operate and execute. So, you know, that was really what he shared with me. He said, any of these other jobs you could get at any time, but this one is unique and it's special. And especially getting it for the first time is hard to do, but after you do it, it opens up the world to you.
That makes sense. He's a good sales guy, sounds like. He sold the opportunity to the person, as it were, which is, I suppose, I always find, and you and I have done Santer sales training together, Ryan. I know you're a big fan of it too, but I guess if you're a good sales guy, you can spot another one coming. And if you follow a process, like, I'm easy, I'm putty in your hands to sell to if you do it right. I'm a difficult guy if you don't do it right. But yeah, I can be sold to, put it that way. And I suppose, tell me about that 3-week process when you landed. I mean, what was the visa process like? These were the days before we had TransferWise and all these kind of companies. I know you shared a story about banking was a challenge. You had to use some workarounds through PayPal to pay your deposit and your rent for that first couple months, I guess. Maybe talk us through some of those kind of bureaucratic frustrations, as it were.
It was, you know, the first few weeks really were pretty simple. I mean, getting on a plane and heading over at the beginning was as easy as me already having my passport and getting on the plane to go. That began a process of us preparing our family to move, which I came over for the first time in early January. I think January 2nd, maybe I landed. And my family then didn't join me until sometime in April. So I was back and forth. I would do, you know, 2 weeks one place, 2 weeks the other, back and forth for a few months until my family was able to move over. There were some parts of this that organizationally, Quest did a great job of setting up for us and making sure that we were ready to go. They were very much in our corner and thinking in our best interest, and had a department with a few people that managed these kinds of assignments. Okay. So to be clear, mine was specifically an assignment and not a relocation. We left for Ireland with the understanding that we would be coming back in about 2 years. At some point we discussed the options of could we extend it and all of those things. And that's another discussion about some of the challenges around what you do with some of those things. But they did some things really well, helping us arrange our shipments and all of those things, because we had to arrange for a shipment to get there quickly by air. And then we had a much longer wait for our shipment that came by sea. They helped us with real estate agents to help us find a place to live. And then there were some things that didn't get thought through as well. We were left on our own to find automobiles. Mm-hmm. So we had to sell our cars here and then buy cars there, which when you're only going to be there for about a year and a half is not an ideal situation when, we needed two cars. So to have to come out of our own pocket for two cars all at once, was something that we probably would have done again. And the two things that were probably the most challenging then were, as you said, dealing with how we got paid. Because I was on assignment, I still got paid in US dollars. And then we had to transfer that money. There was, if you did it quickly, it was going to cost you a lot of money. And if you didn't want to cost it a lot of money, it was going to be done slowly. So there was almost no good way to move money around. For us at the time, the best way to do it was we had to transfer money from our US bank account to a US PayPal account, transfer it from a US PayPal account to an international PayPal account, and then from our international PayPal account to our Irish bank account. And that process took a few days. Right. And there were fees that were involved. And so again, this is going back nearly 10 years at this point. And there are probably better ways to do it. But if you were going to do a bank wire, that was going to be $100 or $150 every time we did it. So there were some things that were really a challenge there. And then dealing with taxes was just a huge hassle. Fortunately, they engaged at EY at first, and then I think we switched to Deloitte later on to help us work through that process. But that was a long, painful exercise to get through that every year, because we paid taxes in the US and in Ireland based on the way they set it up. There were some things there that just logistical challenges, that we kind of had to deal with every day and every week as we were there. If we did it all again, I would certainly ask more questions about some of that stuff and see if we could think through some of those things. But those are certainly a few of the things that come to mind right away.
Yeah, that makes sense. I'm actually on a future show going to have a tax expert on, because tax is one of the recurring themes on our podcast. It comes up at a corporate level, and obviously for expats, it's particularly significant. I've seen this play out in multiple organizations I've been a part of, where it seems like you pay tax in the US for the first 2 years. There's a dual taxation agreement between Ireland and the US. And you pay the difference in whichever country it applies. But that's subject to a 2-year visa, as you rightly said, assignment, not relocation. And then after that period of time, there is a difference. You have to pay from an Irish payroll perspective. So I'm not an expert on that. I've heard stories from others, but yeah, we'll be talking about that on a further show. So I suppose I'm curious, you're from near Dublin, Ohio. You didn't move to Dublin, Ireland. You moved to Cork in Ireland, which is Ireland's most second populous city. And as Rena Hegarty, our prior guest on the show, said, Ireland's real capital, which is a phrase you'll be quite familiar with, Ryan. Maybe you could just take us through, kind of culture shock. What surprised you? What didn't surprise you? And how did you kind of navigate through that? What did you like? What did you find a challenge? Tell us a bit about that cultural piece.
You'll find this funny. One of the challenges I found is I had no idea what some of the road signs meant.
Okay.
took me a long time to figure out what some of the stripes on the road and things meant. And I was like, oh, we're getting closer to the exit. So there were some funny things like that. But, you know, for us, very little, I couldn't even find anything to be critical about. I mean, we absolutely loved our experience from the minute we touched down. You know, if there were challenges for us, it had a lot more to do with the life that we kind of left than the life that we came to. We have a very tight-knit family here, and so it was difficult on my parents and my wife's parents and our family when we were gone for a couple years. You know, we weren't in a position where we could travel back and forth to see them regularly, or they could travel back and forth to see us regularly. You know, this was before everybody was really accustomed to Zoom and Skype calls and things like that. So, you know, we had to develop some new habits to interact with our family. That was probably the biggest challenge for us, you know, with what was behind us instead of what was before us. But once we got there, you know, we were just so delighted to find, to see how community centric the areas were in Ireland. It was a very tight-knit group of people, and even so, we never felt like outsiders. You know, we were certainly, I think, kind of a curiosity at times, but the local groups that we got plugged into are, you'll probably remember, our kids were very involved in gymnastics. Right. And that community of people really embraced us. My older son played basketball, and that community embraced us. And we were involved in our church, and certainly at work. You know, we felt like parts of those families. And there's such local pride in the various areas, and you know, it all just felt very. Just very friendly to us. And so it was really easy for us to get into that. And in many ways, we miss that today. You know, we probably feel more like outsiders on our street today than we did in our neighborhood in Ireland. So, you know, we very much enjoyed that.
Now, that's great feedback. You know, I like hearing that. And obviously, I'm a big fan of my own country and kind of selling it internationally as a platform. But when somebody else says it back to me, I think it's much more valid because they've had that kind of genuine experience themselves. I think we're quite a parochial society. You know, in some ways, in rural settings, you know, everyone knows each other's business. But you know what? That's not the worst thing in the world sometimes. That folks look out for each other. And I think what was kind of unique as well about the experience, because I was a bit of a fish out of water too in that environment. I was a guy from Dublin, I'd moved to Cork. And then you've also got this melting pot of other European cultures. So we had Italians, we had French, German, Turkish, and a whole host of other nationalities kind of in this one location, all selling kind of software. Do you think that from a cultural standpoint, with all that in mind, that there were differences in the way in which each of those different regions sold? And I know you were largely focused on the UK, and my software group had kind of a more of a EMEA focus. But I'm curious to think, you know, to hear what your kind of feedback was. Was there even a difference between the way it was sold in the UK, and even the smaller market in Ireland, and then, you know, some of those other European cultures as well with some of the other sales leaders in that group we were a part of, Ryan? Maybe take us through what your kind of takeaways were there.
Oh, they were all very different. You know, that melting pot of people was one of my favorite aspects of being there. And I don't know if you'll remember this dinner, but you were there. It was a dinner that was that our manager Catherine Kelly hosted for all of us. And at some point in the evening, we sat around and people were talking about their family roots and backgrounds. And a friend of ours, Fabian Lolicar, I remember him saying that his family moved to a certain place in France in 1100 and something. Yeah. And they're telling us this whole background, and we sat around and you know, our German counterparts, she talked about how you know, all of her grandparents had been killed in the war, and entire generations of people wiped out, and we kind of went from nation to nation to nation as they shared their stories, and it was just fascinating to me. Now, one of my favorite moments of being there, and you know, I think to your point about sales, all of those things fed into the different countries. I mean, we made our numbers. You know, the teams delivered because they understood their business. Region to region, they were quite a bit different. Some places were very partner centric, and you were going to do very little without partners involved. Some places were very nationalistic in that you needed to do business in language. You know, if you're going to sell into France, or you're going to sell into Germany, or you're going to sell into Italy, you need to do that in French and German and Italian. If you're going to sell into the Nordics, it certainly helps, but you can do it in English.
Right.
You know, so they each have some of those nuances that range anywhere from good to do to absolutely necessary to do. And, you know, one of the things I can't emphasize enough for those people that are thinking about moving from the U.S. to go overseas is that you may be going to take organizational knowledge and institutional knowledge about what you do and how you do it. But that is very much to be a guideline and not a rule. You know, you cannot simply expect to move to EMEA and replicate what you've done in the US. That's a recipe for disaster. You need to go as an enabler and as somebody who has knowledge and background about the solutions that you sell, about some parts of the model that you're in. But you can't just simply say, we're going to do it the same way in EMEA that we've done it in the US. You know, if you do that, if that's your plan, stop now. You will fail. You know, there are so many nuances and so many differences. I mean, I definitely walked away from my experience realizing that I had learned much more than I had taught. And, you know, I think you have to go over as somebody who can help facilitate and educate and enable. But replicate should not be one of the words in your vocabulary.
So that's a really interesting point that you make there. And I'd like to dive into that a little bit more. We've talked about this on prior shows as well, that there are different, there are different nuances with EMEA, and you've touched on some of them there as well. And I certainly appreciate the feedback and the sentiment. You know, the numbers got done. It was just done in a roundabout different sort, not a roundabout sort of way, but a different approach. I mean, we have different languages, as you touched on, we have different currencies. We're all working for a US multinational, i.e. we're reporting in dollars. So you've got to be cognizant of that. You've got different marketing layers in those respective languages as well. And unfortunately, sometimes that can lead to additional costs to the business. And when you're trying to sell that message back to headquarters, maybe could you share with us some of your experiences around that and how you went about that selling back into the US that things are a bit different in EMEA?
Well, fortunately for me in the Quest experience, those decisions were already made. You know, at that time, I was one of the last pieces of the process. Now in the years since, I have set up multiple sales teams in EMEA, both in the UK, in Ireland. I've had teams in Russia and other places. So I've been through this process since then. So I wasn't a part of the discussions the first time I did it, but certainly in the years since, as we've gone through. And there are a number of considerations. The biggest thing is helping to educate people about where you think you should do it. The tax benefits for Ireland are tremendous. Depending on what you're looking to set up and the types of capabilities that you need, there's a tremendous infrastructure of people. The IDA does a wonderful job of supporting organizations that are looking to come and helping to educate them and help them find a place to go, network with other people. You know, I think you know, when I talk to people, when I talk to organizations about setting this up, certainly for me, one of the main selling points is I have a personal network of people that I can leverage in country now. You know, so we're going to go to Ireland. You know, that's a big selling point for me. But also just the cost of employment of people. If you're going to hire somebody in France, or you're going to hire somebody in London, you need to expect to pay substantially more for that same person than you would in Ireland. And that doesn't mean that you shouldn't pay your people in Ireland, but for the same euro you spend on somebody in Ireland, the cost of employment is going to be significantly higher in some of those other places, just in what you have to pay in additional costs.
For our listeners, that's a layered cost. The salaries are somewhat comparable across the region, depending on the country. Certainly in Western Europe, it's that additional layer cost. If you're looking at paying rent in central London, you're looking at paying additional corporation tax in the UK, and then you have additional overheads. That's where your additional cost base comes in, if that makes more sense. From an EMEA perspective, would you maybe just share with me what were those kind of what I would call like cusp or tipping point factors? So you've mentioned that since you've done your Quest assignment that you had set up other multiple teams. Like for you and your more recent experience, Ryan, where were the kind of inflection points in the business that said we need to think about Europe? Why was it now that this then became a discussion point to go into Europe?
Well, in my experience, in the experiences that I've had, I don't know that that I can give you the best answer on that specific part of it, because the businesses that I was a part of were already in Europe in some way. And where I was involved is, do we invest more heavily in Europe through the inside sales motion? So we were... You know, we were kind of beyond, do we go to Europe? And we were at, how do we scale out in Europe? Because normally what happens is you hire a person to be, you have your first person in Europe, and he's the sales guy, and he's kind of the marketing guy, and he'll do translations if he needs to, and he's the technical guy, and he's on an island doing all of his own things. You know, that happens pretty early, and in my, if it were my company, I wouldn't be hiring an American to go and do that. There are lots of those guys who love that challenge of being a lone wolf who is going to go out and start to build EMEA on his own. Where my part of it and my experience has really come in is once you've figured out that the organization is big enough and there's a real market there that you can sell into and you need to cover a lot more ground, then you can bring in lower cost resources, build a sales team, and cover a lot more ground through inside sales. You know, that's kind of a natural extension, depending on the business you've done. I've been in companies where a lot of times we're selling to a lot of enterprise companies, and then, you know, and then we need to work on solidifying the mid-market presence. For me, one of those, one of the key factors is leadership. And if you are going to go into that market, you may be able to find good inside salespeople, but you have to have a really, really good inside sales leader. And for me, I know some of those people. I've worked with many of those people over the years now. And for me to be able to go in and say, there are plenty of people there. All the infrastructure is there, the costs and everything else are right. If we can nail down one of these people that we know is a good leader, I need to know that I can trust that person and have somebody that's excellent that can do this. And specifically in Cork, there's a huge infrastructure of companies that have done this and have massive inside sales teams, and really fortunate there are a lot of leadership there. And so being able to get someone that you can really trust to help you build this out, because they're going to be a builder. They're not just going to be a day-to-day tactical manager. They have to know how to kind of strategically build that out. And for me, that's one of the main selling points, is to say, I know I can get somebody that can lead this. And then once we get the right leader, everything else will fall into place.
Yeah, no, I think you've touched on some interesting ones there, and they seem to be very much recurring themes on these podcasts that we have. The IDA you mentioned as well, talk about the three T's. So tax is one, talk about talent, and then track record as well. So I think the latter two are probably key. And, you know, people say that our corporation tax rate is 12.5%. We actually collect more corporation tax per head of capital than any other country in Europe. So, it's actually quite counterintuitive. Secondly, in terms of the track record, it becomes a matter of the talent pool feeding into that, whereby if you know others are here, then talent is kind of more readily available. Did that kind of surprise you, or was that something that you found was relatively straightforward, the talent piece, you know, and how did you go about interviewing? Was the process any different from an EMEA perspective when you were recruiting here locally?
You know, what's funny to me, this is how naive I was when I first started, which gets to the heart of, you can't just replicate.
Right.
So when I started interviewing for the teams at Quest, I was just flabbergasted to see all of these people that had career breaks, or they had gap years, and they had all this time where they just seemingly didn't do anything. And at the beginning, quite honestly, I just kind of discarded those, and I moved them to the file. I mean, we had so many CVs that we were looking at. I just moved on from them. And I didn't consider them because I thought, well, these are people that aren't committed to what they're doing, and they're taking time off to travel and learn to speak another language and work as a jet ski instructor, you know, in between serious career things, you know. And how naive I was to find that was much more than the norm than it was the exception. And, you know, so there were some things like that for me that I just had to learn. And I came to appreciate those much more, that, you know, people were investing in themselves and, you know, their outlook on things and their balance to the way that they looked at their life was, which was much different than what I had become accustomed to. So the talent was certainly there. And what I've found in the years since is that, a lot of times now, I don't even necessarily have to do a lot of convincing to people about this.
Okay.
All of the companies that I have, any of the companies that I've talked to about this in recent years, most of them are already familiar with Ireland. They're familiar in a lot of times with Cork. A couple companies ago, I set up a team in Cork, and actually, you'll find this funny. So our manager, Catherine Kelly, she had spent a long time, as you know, at EMC. The executive team that I was working for had come from EMC, albeit in the US. Some of them had spent a little bit of time in Europe, and they knew Catherine really well. And so it was very easy for me to say, hey, look, this is the place to do it. These are the types of people that we can get. And it was a no-brainer to them. The company I'm with now already had an office in Cork when I started here. They're a $150 million sales company. It's not like they were a massive company, but their finance team, they had a back office finance team that they had already set up an office down on one of the quays in Cork. And so, you know, the awareness, I'll introduce people from my network, and a lot of times they already know each other. Our CFO here at DataStax was good friends with a guy named Mike Madonia, who was another American that moved over to Cork with me as part of that. And he was one of the keys to kind of solidifying me coming to DataStax. So it's really funny how small the world is anymore. And Cork and Ireland have built a reputation for being an incubator for these types of companies, being a great place to do business. And so for me anyway, in my recent experience over the last 6 or 7 years anyway, is those discussions are much, much easier to have. People are much more familiar, and it's not like you're trying to convince them of something that they've never heard of or never considered.
It's very, very true, because the world talks about certain layers of separation. And I think in Ireland, it's really one, if even that. Everyone knows someone who knows them. And that's particularly true in Cork. everybody knows everybody. And I think the IT tech community is so small. What I always say to candidates is, do right by people, be ethical, transparent, and never burn your bridges, because that situation you've just highlighted happens all of the time. And it's that comfort level of knowing that you would work with somebody well because you've either worked with them in the past, which is the ideal, or you trust somebody enough that they've worked with them that you could feel comfortable working with them, right? I think for me, that's been a very important factor in the successes of a lot of the candidates that I work with, is that they have always done right by others and they've conducted themselves to the height of professionalism, because unfortunately, you don't get a second chance because the community is so small. And mm-hmm. That's very much been my experience, and I think you've just echoed it there and found that to be the case also, even from a broader US perspective as well, right? As we wrap up here, Ryan, I always like to ask people what's their experience of the crack, spelled CRAIC. So probably a phrase that I've revisited for you today that you may not have heard in near to a decade, but I suppose it speaks to our culture, our sense of humor, our utter levels of sarcasm. I suppose maybe take us through, as we wrap up here, what your experience was of our kind of dark sense of humor almost.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you a funny story about that word in particular. I would come into the office and people would say, "What's the crack?" And you know, I had heard it enough that I understood what they were asking me, and I was blending in, and I was starting to, I was starting to understand some of the colloquial things that people would say to me, and so one morning, after I had experienced this for a while, I got into the office and I just got on Instant Messenger to ask somebody something, and I typed out, "What's the crack?" And of course I spelled it CRACK. And I just heard howls of laughter from the other side of the office, because I had, clearly I didn't know what I was talking about. I had gotten the context right. But I had no idea that, that it was not spelled CRACK.
It's just the Irish spelling of an old word. But did you find yourself kind of bemused a bit with some of our heightened levels of sarcasm? Was that a challenge for you at all?
Whether for good or for bad, sarcasm is a bit of a second language for me as well. I'm sometimes reminded that it's one of the lower forms of humor, but I can't seem to help myself. But you know, we had such a good time with people, and I mean, as you know, in the times that we spent together, just as a team, I mean, even with work, with colleagues and at work functions, we had such a good time. People from all over that we love the way that people interact and the way that they think about things and the way that they joke about things. And I tend to have a bit of a drier sense of humor myself. So it really worked well for me. I think, if you're somebody who doesn't appreciate subtlety and nuance, you may miss some of it, I absolutely loved it. And like I said, for our family, there isn't a week that goes by that we don't talk about our time there. And, if we weren't in a different age and stage now with our kids and where they are in their lives, it wouldn't be crazy to think we could end up back there at some time. So, always be dear to our hearts.
I don't think myself or the country could ask for any better feedback than that, Ryan. So really want to thank you on that one. It's been a pleasure to have you on today's show. And I do hope that we can get to work together at some point in the future.
It's been my absolute pleasure, Ross. It's good to talk to you again.
Take care.
Thanks, buddy.
You've been listening to the Global Tech Leaders Podcast, designed for both established and aspiring career-focused tech rock stars, as well as helping leadership figure out how to speak global in today's multicultural world. For further details, check out sf-talent.com.